All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to another episode of the Close Up Magic. I'm your host, Stephen Cameron, and today we have a really fun podcast. P.D. Webb from Twitter joins us, and he specializes in player development and the NBA draft, and is just really, really knowledgeable on young players and what it takes for them to be successful in this league. So we obviously talk a lot about the Magic since this Magic team is currently super, super young. So you're going to enjoy this episode. It's great. I want to say thanks to all the listeners. There's a few weeks break that we took there. My wife and I took a honeymoon, and then I jumped right back into a crazy busy work period for me. So, we haven't had a podcast in about 2 or 3 weeks. So we're getting back into it, rolling back into things. P.D. Webb is a great guest to get us back on track, right before we hit Summer League here in a few days. So, P.D., thanks for joining us. And as you guys know, we still don't have a new intro for this podcast, but I'm starting to develop that now. So get ready. A new banger is going to be coming out. Until then, you get to listen to whatever music I select for you now. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, we have a great guest today. We have P.D. Webb. You should know him from NBA Twitter. He's one of the more deep dive NBA draft player development people on the Twitter sphere. So if you're not familiar with him, go check out his work. Puts out great stuff. P.D., how you doing?
I'm doing good. Getting into the lull between the draft itself and Summer League. So having a little bit of time to reflect, talk through the decisions that were made. You know, we're all getting out from the whirlwind that is free agency. And then we have about, 2 or 3 days until we get to see these guys play for their teams for the first time.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of in that same spot where it's, we just drafted, that was a lot of excitement, a couple days of chillness. We knew the Magic probably weren't going to make a lot of splashes within the free agency. So I didn't really have anything, just my expectations were low. So my energy levels were kind of low there as well. And I just can't wait to get to Summer League and just hopefully watch this young squad ball out. Before we get too much into the Magic, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your background within basketball. I know your focus is primarily on like the draft and player development, but how did you kind of, first, how did you get into basketball and into that realm of just where you're at today?
Yeah, I'm from a basketball family. Dad was a coach, played in college, and that was sort of passed on to me. I started to coach high school basketball and work in player development about 5-6 years ago, and started studying the draft seriously about 3 or 4 years ago, with writing happening in the past 2 years. Where I started to put, long form deep dives on Patreon, trying to bridge the gap between the scouting process and the day-to-day development of players. And then last year I expanded that into doing video work on YouTube with the series called Let's Watch Film, where I sat down with a guest. We picked a single game from a prospect, talked about what we saw that went well, what we saw that needs improvement, what the pathways to improvement are, the micro skills that they could work on, and how that fits into the modern NBA. And that was something that I think has really been helpful for people who didn't have the same background I did, where like there wasn't an option but to watch 10 hours of basketball a day on Saturdays and Sundays, and really try to unify language and get people on the same page so we can stop having the same 3 or 4 repetitive arguments on Twitter every single day.
What's the most repetitive argument that annoys you that is probably most misunderstood by the common public?
The idea that like analytics and film don't say the exact same thing most of the time. I think the role of analytics and the role of film is a common war point where the middle is just like, yeah, you use what works for you, but you have to understand the other side. But I guess that doesn't settle in for everybody.
Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm a master at like either one. I understand some aspects of analytics. I understand, you know, parts of watching film, but I didn't grow up a basketball player. I played with my friends. In elementary school, I played one season, but my athletic life took me in other directions growing up as a kid and, you know, young adult, and really fell in love with the game, within the last decade or so when I really started watching it and getting more into it. And yeah, I definitely feel like you have to have a balance of understanding how analytics play to with what you are visually seeing. And I'm sure there's so much more when you're really deep into it to where there's tons of different takeaways that work even stronger together. But it's funny when you just see people throw one or the other out the window completely without recognizing either one. Let's get into the Magic a little bit, right? This is a Magic podcast. The Magic have a really young, fun, exciting team. We just drafted Jalen Suggs and Moritz Wagner with the pick 5 and 8. We also have a bunch of other young, skilled basketball players with Cole Anthony, RJ Hampton, Chuma Okeke, along with the other names like Jonathan Isaac and Markelle Fultz now. We're not going to be able to hit everyone on this team. So let's just kind of focus, at least in the beginning, on our newest additions and kind of what you see in them. And let's just first start with Jalen Suggs. You know, we grabbed him at pick 5. I personally was hoping he was going to fall to us. There was all those rumors about the Raptors liking Scottie Barnes and they did. And obviously they picked him and we got Jalen Suggs and I was super psyched. If we hadn't gotten Jalen Suggs, I was, you know, open to almost anyone other than Scottie Barnes. He's not someone I was overly in love with. But we got Jalen Suggs, so I don't have to worry about any of that. Were you surprised that the Raptors actually passed up on him and went with Scottie Barnes over Jalen Suggs?
I don't think necessarily. I think that the Raptors ultimately came to the conclusion that like they saw Suggs as a secondary playmaker, and that's not really how they've seemed to value guards. They like a guard is a sort of either a primary or of non-interest. And so, like, you know, Barnes fits their general profile, which is long-armed wings with a penchant for defense. And the shooting development is something they certainly believe that they can do, having had a good track record with Pascal and OG. So while there was always smoke and there's smoke for literally everything, I mean, you can find a rumor that says anything 2 days before the draft. Doesn't matter if it's from pick 1 or from pick 60. Teams are just so interested in making sure that no one knows precisely what they're doing. That was always going to be in the cards. I think Suggs is really fascinating for this Magic team because, like, this roster is so sort of equivalent on talent that how roles are allocated and how usage is allocated is going to be so important for not just the development of Suggs, but for the development of basically everybody on this roster. And I'm really excited to see how it plays out.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't know. I mean, he's got, from what I've seen at least, he's got the potential to be, you know, a multi-time all-star, a really good two-way player that I think can really, really help the Magic go along. But the Magic have, and we're kind of going off outline a little bit. I know I sent you a little bit of an outline, but it's one of the questions. I just kind of want to get to it earlier. Like, we have so many guards. You know, we now have Fultz, which has been reported to be ready for training camp. We have RJ Hampton, who supposedly has grown to like roughly around 6'6". And we have Cole Anthony as well. How do you see Jalen Suggs fitting in with that group? I mean, my opinion is at some point in time down the road, it doesn't need to be a decision this year, really. But at some point, they might have to consolidate some of these guys. But how do you see Suggs really fitting in with that group this year? And what can he bring to the Magic from day one?
I mean, I think that the important thing is that, like, basically none of these guys are fully formulated. There isn't a guy who's guaranteed to get 30% usage. There isn't a guy who has a really definite role. And I think for the next 2 or 3 years, it's figuring out the allocation of usage. Like, RJ Hampton is now like 6'6", roughly. And so, like, that could make him a wing long term, which means that you don't necessarily want to use him the same way when, you know, people thought he was a point guard 2 years ago when he was coming out of high school. You know, Cole Anthony is a score first point guard who struggles with making efficient passing rates going downhill, and Markelle Fultz has a shooting concern. So I think that Suggs in a lot of ways is the connecting piece, and that he can be played next to any of those three, and that he allows the other two them to play three guard units with each combination that wouldn't really be possible on their own. So that even if he isn't, you know, a guy who can handle that 35 usage where he's making every single play and running every single pick and roll, he can connect lineups that have Markelle and Cole without, you know, losing any of what makes them strong or allowing defenses to load up on a particular aspect.
With when you say like the connecting piece, I guess I'm wondering like, what's his superpower as a player, if that makes sense, right? I know he's got the length and ability to be like an athletic two-way player, but offensively, I guess, when you say connecting, how do you mean?
I mean that he does very well in about four or five different aspects, but he doesn't necessarily have one that's awesome. Like, he's a good shooter, but not an excellent one. He can create good advantage, but he's not somebody that like is going to get 2 feet in the paint every single time.
Sure.
He's a very good positional rebounder, but he's not like a completely like absurd athlete. I think that like his superpower is that he allows for really flexible lineups, and that, you know, he doesn't take anything off the table, which is, as you know, you've seen from the Magic's team building process so far, is a really difficult thing to find in prospects, where like everybody has their own specific context where it's like, well, if we play, you know, if we play Jonathan Isaac, we can't have somebody else who's afraid to shoot on or hesitant to shoot on the floor, then or else, you know, our spacing is gonna go crazy. Or, you know, with Mo, we have to find a strong guy next to him because he can't take certain assignments. Like, Suggs is his ability is that he sort of unlocks lineups that wouldn't make sense without him. But because he's there, he's able to make up the difference and connect pieces that, you know, have their flaws on their own. He's able to sort of do 125% of what would be positionally expected.
Assuming everyone is healthy. Thank you for explaining that, by the way. That definitely gives more context to what I was trying to put together in my head. Assuming everyone is healthy, right? Fultz is good to go day one. What is your starting lineup? Or even how would you stagger these young players? Also considering we have two veterans that probably aren't, in my opinion, they're not just going to be like third string guards, you know, right away until I imagine the Magic will work a way to like trade them or find a balance at some point. But we essentially have six guards if you include Terrence Ross and Gary Harris. So how do you make six guards? Now, granted, some of them can play the three a little bit, you know, be more of wings. But how do you make that work? And what would you do if you were Coach Mosley and needed to give him or, you know, a person on his staff?
I mean, that's incredibly tough because, like, you don't know what somebody like Markelle looks like in the preseason. You don't know how receptive certain people are to different types of roles. Like, to me, Cole seems like the natural person to come off the bench because he is so scoring minded.
Sure.
And he can, you know, in a lot of ways that accentuates the fact that he's not going to have to face like starting ones and twos. He can sort of feast on a little bit less physically accomplished players. And it just like it, you can build an offense around him in those moments in a way that's not really possible with starting units. But some guys don't necessarily aren't into that, especially so young. So I think that it's going to be really difficult. I mean, to me, I would want to start Markelle and Suggs initially,
sure,
with maybe Gary Harris at the three. But there's about seven different lineup combinations you could throw out that would make complete sense. And that's a lot of what makes this team interesting. I think that Suggs is kind of a non-starter at the starter position. Like he has to be kind of the first name on the sheet because when you pick somebody at the top five, they have to start.
Right. You have to find a way to fit him in there. You know, I almost hated to say this, but part of me was like wishing Fultz was more on the New Year All-Star break timeline to return, just so we could have a couple of months of just one less person to figure out and just kind of see what we have in other ways, and then we bring him back. But, you know, recent reports is sounding like he's in a much better spot to come back sooner than later. So it's going to be challenging. I'm really excited to see how they do that because, I mean, you know, Terrence Ross and Gary Harris, like those guys are going to play. You know, they're not going to sit there for the Magic fans that I think that, you know, are that they're just going to sit on the bench. That's not going to happen. You know, and I don't know if I personally want it to happen. I don't think that's necessarily going to be a good positive thing for the Magic if those guys don't play. You know, the young guys need someone on the court that's been there a little bit to help keep things a little bit calmer when things start to get a little bit overwhelming, in my opinion. So let before we go too much more down that way, let's talk a little bit about Franz Wagner. I was a little surprised by this pick, but his name was picking up a lot of steam in the Magic community a few days before the draft. I was thinking a little bit more towards like Moses Moody or James Bouknight, maybe even Kuminga if he was still on the board, which he wasn't, but those are like names I was looking at pick 8. How did you feel about Franz Wagner at selection 8, and how do you see him and his role for the Magic working out?
So I think Wagner is albeit like the most unexciting of the picks available, probably the best one for the long term, because he is somebody that offers a lot of versatility, in that he's about 6'10". He's a dribble pass shoot wing who is a fantastic positional defender. He is capable of being really flexible next to as the 3 or the 4 in a lot of the Magic lineups. And that's, while they have a lot of wings, they don't necessarily have people that can shift depending on need. The biggest concern with him is that he's a very good shooter and a historically very good shooter, but he just doesn't take enough threes. And his 3-point volume is going to be essential for the ability to play him at the 3 and to get versatility out of that shooting. So is it the difference between him being a very good playoff player is does he shoot off of movement? Can he shoot off the dribble a little bit? Is he able to be run off the line? Because he has the makings of a fantastic defensive player, but also a very smart offensive player. It's just how serious teams take his threat to score and his off-ball gravity.
He's someone I was learning a little bit more about as we were getting closer to the draft. I wasn't really thinking he was going to be someone in our range until the hype started getting a little bit more. What are areas of his game that he might need to improve on the most to be successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially for the situation he's in, it's just the shooting. Like there are games where every time that he's open, it comes out of his hands, and there's other times where, and you've seen this to Jonathan Isaac, where he's open, you can see he's thinking about shooting, the defense is letting him shoot, then he thinks about shooting again, and then ultimately passes it up. Sure. And it's also strange because as a youth prospect at age like 15 or 16, he was considered like only a shooter, like a, I would say, less than stellar defensive player who just like had every shooting tool in the book and knocked him down at a high clip. And then it sort of inverted for him as a draft prospect. And, you know, the 4 or 5 years interceding, he's also really young. He's like a freshman age player who's just completed his sophomore year, which is also important. But in the interceding years, he's become a do-everything player who has good shooting numbers but doesn't necessarily have the shooting volume. So I think that's going to be essential.
Petey, how do you develop something like that if, you know, like off the court? You know, obviously on what would like a training strategy for, you know, like even J.I. and Franz Wagner, where they really need to make that happen. How do you... What would a training program even look for that to develop those aspects for them? Is it literally just, hey, go take 1,000 threes a day?
No, because I mean, the thing about go take 1,000 threes a day is that if you make them at a high enough clip, and like, again, Franz Wagner is an absolute knockdown shooter in open gym. Just like it's not a thing of, you know, him thinking that he can't shoot. It's that he's always thinking, you know, got to get a great shot. And at times he doesn't recognize that him shooting an open three is just a great shot. I think that it's watching film and saying like, hey, our team needs you to shoot this. Like, I don't really care about your feelings on whether you think this is like a pretty good shot. Like, I want you to shoot it. And then setting up, you know, training events and you know, small sided games where he has to recognize when he's open and fire and getting, you know, punishing undershooting versus, you know, we think of young players as having to work on their shot selection and, you know, perceiving themselves as like, hey, you can't take this shot because it's heavily contested. Doing the inverse of being like, if you do not shoot 3 threes in the next 3 minutes of the summer league game, like we're going to have a very serious conversation at practice tomorrow. Like suddenly they'll change their minds. And I think that building positive feedback loops and positive behaviors by enforcing it in practice and enforcing it in the film room is going to be essential for him and for Jonathan Isaac.
It's just interesting to think about, because like we went from having Jonathan Isaac and Aaron Gordon, but really some questions about depth there to where now we have, you know, Chuma Okeke, Jonathan Isaac, Franz Wagner. You know, some people even speculate Wendell Carter Jr. could play a little bit of power forward. There's just a lot of like versatility between, I don't know, the 4-5 and a little bit of the 3, I guess. Can Wagner play the 3? Like, what do you think his most natural position is going to be? And I mean, I'm a little old school. I know basketball is positionless, but I also see see positions a little bit old school in a sense. Like, where do you think his most natural fit is?
I think of him as a 4. He can defend 3s. Positionally, he can definitely like hang with 3s. I think that he's probably a little thin to guard the prime 3s of the world. But I think the long-term idea is being able to play him at the 5 defensively, even if it's only for 3 or 5 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's a huge dude with a long wingspan, with great defensive positioning, good timing, and more than enough athleticism. So, I mean, the idea, I think, on a perfect timeline is that the shooting volume comes up and you can just put 5 fairly skilled dudes on the floor and not lose that much at the rim, especially if you have, like, Jonathan Isaac next to him at the 4. Because, I mean, Jonathan Isaac, in theory, you want him to play the 5, but he's just not strong enough.
Yeah.
Franz offers a lot of those same ideas, and you'd get overlapping rim protection. So, I mean, like, that's certainly a lineup that I think we'll see on his rookie contract. It's also going to depend on getting the shooting volume resolved, or else those lineups could get pretty muddy in the paint for a guy who, again, can shoot really well, but often chooses to pass up for better looks.
Magic fans have been screaming and yelling to see more of Jonathan Isaac at the 5, just occasionally, you know, a few minutes here and there for the last couple of years. Now, granted, part of that might have been delayed just because of health concerns and him not being on the court or available, but also Coach Clifford had a little bit of stubbornness and rigidness with his lineups. And I think I think maybe less than 10 minutes of him at the 5 is total for his entire like 4 years of playing in the NBA. So, I would welcome that with him, you know, being more of that 4-5 that you were talking about. Do you think he's someone that might be a good candidate to go get reps down in the G League that, For the Magic's content, the Lakeland Magic are about an hour and a half away, so relatively close to Orlando. Do you think for part of his player development, he could be someone that would be a good candidate to go spend some time down there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he will have a couple of games with the Lakeland Magic in his rookie year. Obviously, like, injuries and all that are the depth of in front of him, you know, could have a weird variance at any moment. But I think that especially if he has games where he doesn't shoot, just like sending him down for a day and being like, go get 15 threes up.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it is going to be an enforcement mechanism for them, or an option for an enforcement mechanism to be like, if you are not aggressive, we have an avenue for you to go be aggressive. But like, what can't happen is that you pass up open threes. I think that's something that really has to be explored. You also have to get buy-in, because like, it's much better than it was 5 years ago, where players were very hesitant to get sent, quote, down to the G League, and now players generally view it as an opportunity where like they understand what's happening, if this is simply a chance to go, you know, work on their game and come right back.
Right.
And so young guys like do not have that same mentality of like, I'm getting sent down to the lower leagues where I'm not wanted. And instead you have quite a few guys who passed through the G League, you know, worked on an element of their game or refined an element of their game and bounced right back up to be successful instead of feeling like they're, you know, getting sent to the Eastern Front.
It definitely helps that the Magic's G League team is now in Lakeland, and no longer, I think it used to be in like Iowa or something like that. It was, or like Maine. It was somewhere. It was no Erie Bayhawks. That was our old. Yeah. That was who we used to have. And, I remember like sending Steven Zimmerman out there and stuff like that. It's just, you know, they'd be gone for weeks, where now it's like, you can be sent down there for a day and back 2 days later for the next game, and you know, get game time minutes if you have your spot in the rotation or injuries or whatever. You know, we've seen that with Wes Iwundu a lot back when he was on the team, and a few other players. So it's nice to have them so close. Let's transition to the rest of the team. You know, this squad is really young. We also have Mo Bamba and Wendell Carter Jr. that we've you know, haven't really even touched on. What are some of the players, the young players that you are just excited about for this team that you think have a nice future in the NBA?
I mean, seeing Wendell is the thing that I'm really excited about. He's had kind of a snake bitten career from his year at Duke, sort of not having the environment that he thought he was coming into, to, you know, the Chicago years that were boilinized, where he was, you know, encouraged to not shoot threes. And
you said like, that very polite.
Yeah. And, you know, like basically had his development set back a number of years. And I think that not just a trade, but a trade to the Magic, who do need spacing, is going to be an environment that enables the parts of his game that were always the most interesting as a prospect, which is his, like, his positional shooting and positional passing. And, you know, in lineups next to Jonathan Isaac, where that's going to be really needed, it's really exciting. So I think that, like, for me, this is, I don't want to say like his rookie year, because that's, you know, not necessarily true, but a chance for him to reignite the things that made him such an interesting dude, because like those also overlap really well with like stuff the team needs.
The Magic fans are obsessed with Mo Bamba. There's two water temperatures. It's either hot or cold. There's very little like lukewarm people, or they're just okay with it. People either like trade him right away, or he still can be like a future multi-time all-star and will easily beat out Wendell Carter Jr. relatively quickly this year. What's your thoughts on Bamba? Is it time for him to get a new environment? I'm personally like, I'm still relatively high on him. He's had a, you know, in my opinion, a snake bitten like track record as well. And he might need a new scenery, but also like last year after the deadline, he was really starting to put some things together offensively. Defensively, I still had some question marks about his game and just his IQ about it and all that. Do you think he's got the potential to put it together to be a successful NBA player with the Magic?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that makes it so complicated for Bamba is that, you know, he really struggled with the after effects of COVID. Yeah. And that like just makes it hard, because like I have no idea how to evaluate that.
Yeah.
You know, like on one hand, you're like, oh, this big man's struggling. It's like, well, he's struggling because he faced, you know, severe medical consequences for his diagnosis and stuff like that. So it can be difficult to proceed logically from something that, you know, just never really happened before. I mean, I don't think that trading him now is a particularly wise idea, because this is as low as his value will be.
Sure.
Like that's not like, you know, just my opinion. Like that's a pretty broad based opinion of, you know, people being like, well, I have no idea how he's going to react to that, because this is the first time we've ever seen it. So I think that if you are trading him, there has to be an acknowledgement that like this is the lowest possible return, and that you won't get a return from that second camp of being like, oh yeah, we think he's going to bounce back and be a multi-time all-star, because the league in general is just more cautious about stuff like that. So I think that it's probably smarter to hold on to him and to, you know, to play the patience game and to still play for upside, in part because like the other option is to trade him for composite pieces, which are most likely going to be depth, and that's not necessarily a thing that this team needs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any benefits to trading him. I just want him. I would just love for him to like become at least a league average defender, you know, IQ wise. And that I don't know. He's always going to be that tantalizing player, because he's got a really nice looking shot from my perspective. I'm not a shot doctor, but just it looks really good when he's shooting it. And obviously his length is always going to be, you know, something that can be utilized if it was used properly. So there's always going to be that wonder about him as a player. And it's funny. They're like deep in Magic Twitter, man. There are diehard stands that love this guy. And you know, I want the best for him too, but it's just I also realized that might be at another location at some point in his future, and maybe that's like next season, not now. I don't expect them to do any trades at this point of the year, when it comes to Mo Bamba. But yeah, it's interesting. We have Bamba, Wendell Carter Jr., Wagner. We just signed Robin Lopez. We just signed the other Wagner. So there's depth all over the place with the forwards and bigs right now. How do you develop a team this young? That's a question, because the last time the Magic had a team this young, it turned into there was some okay progress, but to say it politely, it was sort of a clusterfuck, and that whole regime had issues too. But how do you do this so players don't develop bad habits, yet they find ways to work together? Obviously the league is starting to play around with like more multi-guard lineups, so there's plenty of ways there to get creative with lineups. But on and off the court, how do you make this work with the young guys so you can figure out who will be your long-term investments and just turning them all into, you know, the best they can be?
I mean, it starts by having a good player development program that understands what players are and what the next particular step for them is. You know, everybody has a small element that they can be working on during the season that will, you know, blend into a larger whole. So before, we've talked about Franz Wagner and Jonathan Isaac shooting. We've talked about Wendell Carter's passing. We talked a little bit about, you know, Cole Anthony's ability to make reads on the open floor. Like it's player development, but towards a vision of lineups that make sense. The easiest thing you can do for young players is put them in lineups that make sense and that try to hide their weaknesses as much as possible. So, like, don't play Markelle Fultz in lineups where there's not two other positive shooters and at least two other average shooters. Like, that will enable him to get the best out of him and allow him to explore the studio space in a positive sense, not like trying to repeatedly make something out of nothing as three other dudes patrol the paint and the defense is just hanging out there. Like, that's the simplest thing you can do. And part of why being a young team with depth is helpful is that it gives you more combinations of finding the lineups that players play in most that are the most advantageous for their developmental circumstances. So every player sort of has two or three things they need, and because the cupboard is full of both young and older players who are, I would say, pretty different across the board. Like, you don't think you're going to look at Wendell Carter's strengths and weaknesses, Robin Lopez's strengths and weaknesses, and be like, ah, same dude. Yeah. It allows you to be like, okay, so like we should probably pair like Robin and Markelle, or, you know, we should make sure to tie Franz's minutes to Cole. Like you do that, and that's how you start to unspool this roster, is just connecting the strengths and weaknesses and aligning them so no player is put in a disadvantageous situation for extended minutes. Or, you know, when you do find something that doesn't work, you just never go back to it. The worse your roster is, the more you just can't find good minutes for multiple guys, and you're stuck throwing out lineups where it's like, these are our best players. They don't really line up, and in a lot of ways, they're blocking the developments of other people.
How do you handle so many young players while also feeding the veterans like Gary Harris and Ross? Or do the Magic just got to start finding trades that make sense for those vets that want and need to play, and go find vets that are on the backside of their career that don't necessarily demand the type of playing minutes that Ross and Gary Harris should and have?
I mean, I think that you don't need to you need to have vets on a young team. Otherwise, it's like you will not get the stability from young guys that you will get from them. The thing that good coaching staffs can do is just be like, look, we're going to be a bad team. However, yeah, this is what is expected of you. Like, Gary Harris doesn't need creation possessions. So you play him with lineups that have a drive and kick creator. He's going to get what he needs. Like, it's probably not going to be 32 minutes a game.
Right.
As long as you're clear with like him and understand the direction that, like, you know, is making sure that he's performing well in his minutes. He's not going to, you know, those 5 or 6 minutes aren't going to, you know, be a contributing factor to the roughness of the year. But it's about, you know, the level of communication your coaching staff has. It's about the level of doing things that they're being asked to. Like, if you know, your guy's a, if you're a vet who's a great 3-point shooter and they're asking you to, you know, set screens and roll towards the rim, you're not going to be particularly thrilled. But if you're playing Ross in lineups that, you know, I would say like two guard lineups, say like, you know, minutes with Hampton and Suggs, you know, who each have sort of concerns about their handle and concerns about converting advantage, like Tiros's shot making is going to be pretty important there. So maybe you couple those minutes together and making sure that, again, like the vets are known entities, so you know their strengths and weaknesses. So that allows you to say, like, look, we'll never put you in lineups where you're just like being asked to save them, or we're never going to put you in lineups where you don't make sense. And like vets are here for a reason. Like they broadly signed up for this stuff, but it's also that like they understand that they're on a team that is rebuilding, but they still want to play their game. And a good coaching staff can balance those things, and a bad coaching staff struggles to.
It makes sense. Yeah. It's, I'm personally expecting some probably more like, you know, 10 man rotations instead of a 9-man rotation. Just so you can, you know, feed all the mouths and get those different types of lineups that might work, that you were discussing. I'm assuming like spreading out into a 10 man like a pretty big rotation would be a way to achieve some of what you were saying, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you'll probably like 10 might be a touch too big. I think that it'll get cut down to 9 as the year goes on. And like, again, NBA teams always have some level of injury. Like almost no team is ever like truly healthy.
It's the Magic definitely don't have a good track record with that right now either.
So, and again, we're assuming that like, you know, Franz or like, you know, some people will be spending some time with Lakeland in some part. And so like, assuming those two things to be true, like I think you plan for 10 knowing that like most of the season is going to be 9.
Yeah.
But like, I think for a young team, having a lot of guys who need minutes isn't necessarily a bad thing. The bad thing is like, if you have like 4 primary creators on one roster and need to figure out like which one you're actually betting on. But like, I don't really see a functional overlap from this team. I guess you could say like, you know, Franz, Wendell, and Jonathan Isaac theoretically could if they don't shoot at volume. But like, I think that everybody in the organization knows that they need to shoot, even if it's not necessarily like 40% from 3, but enough that a defense respects it.
Sure.
And so like, that sort of good overlap, because they're all modern. They're all modern bigs who bring different broad skills, even though they exist, you know, kind of within the same sort of archetypes. But like there's definitely been young teams that have like, you know, 3 dudes that want to, I mean, those Cleveland teams with Kyrie and Dion are like the perfect example. It's like, it's 2 dudes. There's 1 role. There's not really a way of coexisting. Yeah. One of them is going to have to go. Like that's a situation that like, you kind of can't figure out with lineups. It's like, yeah, one of them's on the court and then one of them's not on the court. That's the best we can do. But, you know, with the Magic, there's so much give and take and so much flexibility around how these lineups could work with both their vets and their young guys that it's going to be a challenge, and Mosley certainly going to have to rise to that challenge. But it's not, you know, by any means impossible or something that like has never been done before. It's just it's a little bit of a lot.
What do you feel about Coach Mosley and, you know, his opportunity this year and his contract that he has being a first time head coach? Do you feel confident that, he's someone that's going to be, successful with this Magic team? Now, granted, successful does not mean, getting them to the playoffs in the next year or so. To me, successful just means good player development, where you can see that steps are going in the right direction with this squad.
I mean, that's his background. His background is a coach on the floor. His background is the personal side of working with young guys and with player development. So in a lot of ways, he's perfectly aligned for it.
Sure.
And like, yeah, the Rick Carlisle coaching tree is most likely going to get an important branch. I think that now that the smoke has blown out of the Rick Carlisle Mavericks relationship, we can see that like the issue wasn't with Mosley or his coaching credentials. It was simply, you know, there was some spike motivating the comments of Carlisle, and this is the job that he really wanted Mosley to have.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. Yeah, I was super psyched on it. I didn't, you know, I don't know much about a lot of the assistant, you know, the head assistants that aren't like the bigger names. But once I did some learning more about where he's coming from and his background and how he got to where he is today to be one of the, you know, the Magic candidates and eventually getting the job, I was pretty psyched on what he's going to bring to this team. And it's glad that that's a, you know, pretty universal outlook that sounds like. So, well, PD, we've spent just about 40 minutes talking together, and I really appreciate your time to come in and talk about my beloved Magic. And I know a lot of the listeners are really going to enjoy this podcast. Before we let you go, do you want to go ahead and let the listeners of the show know where they can find you and your work and, you know, get involved?
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at AboveTheBreak3. I do, you know, long form writing on Patreon and should have a couple things up in the next day or so. All the work is free, but if you're able to donate, that would be fantastic. On Twitter or on YouTube, I do a series called Let's Watch Film, which there's links to in my Twitter bio. There is an hour and 45 minutes on Franz Wagner, and with Ben Pfeiffer. And I believe I have 2 hours talking about Jalen Suggs with my friend Francis up on there. It's you know, long form video breakdowns and talking about micro skills and stuff to improve, and I think would be pretty pretty helpful for any fan who, you know, doesn't boil away their sanity grinding hours of tape year round and just needs an introduction to understand where these guys fit within the team outlook of the future of the Orlando Magic.
And for the listeners, don't worry. I will find those links and I will put them in the thread with this podcast episode once it drops. So go find the thread on Twitter and go spend some hours getting to know our new players. PD, it was great chatting with you. I really appreciate it. You know, we're pulling for the Orlando Magic Summer League team to come away with a championship there. And carry on with that G League championship that we won the year prior, and just keep, you know, then it'll lead to the NBA championship with the actual team. So, you know, we're going to try and win some rings here. So appreciate it. I hope you enjoy the rest of your night, and let's go Magic.
Thank you very much for having me.